So welcome to session 273. My name is Sue Bergen. This session is entitled Fostering and Maintaining Healthy Boundaries Within a Mormon Construct. This session is generously sponsored by Symmetry Solutions, a group practice. We'll explain that a little more in a moment. Are you or someone you love facing a faith transition that's affecting your relationships and other areas of your life? Are you LGBT plus, looking for services that will support your journey? Do you have sexuality concerns, or are you looking for sex positive perspectives? Are you dealing with mental health concerns and looking for a qualified therapist? Symmetry Solutions can help. Symmetry Wellness therapists can do free ecclesiastical consultations for ecclesiastical leaders, offer group and individual therapy, and work with your insurance. So that's our brief little ad. And I feel some heat. Oh, it's from this. That feels good.
Bring it over here.
And you can go to www.symmetrysols.com for more info. Ask that you turn your cell phones off, be respectful and attentive. It's the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. We invite all here to practice looking at all Mormon experiences as legitimate Mormon experiences, no matter how diverse they may be. The session's being recorded. You can purchase it later over at the registration desk. Sunstone needs your dollars, so purchasing from vendors and from Sunstone and donating, all are very welcome. This session's 90 minutes long, and we'll keep within that framework. After this session, many attendees are gathering at the local Crown Burger, a Utah tradition, but please return on time for our plenary with Dr. Gregory Prince at 8 p.m. Seats will fill up quickly. So, about this presentation, this session brings together a panel of mental health professionals and wellness coaches from Symmetry Solutions, LLC, and the purpose is to provide suggestions to you and to get your input as well on creating healthy boundaries in a religious context. We'll discuss common challenges many of us face as we interact with a predominantly patriarchal and authoritative religious structure. From simple things such as whether one feels it is permissible to decline a calling, to more serious questions such as whether we should support children's interviews behind closed doors where they are asked questions about their sexuality. Participants, your panel in front of you, far left, right? Yeah. Natasha Helfer Parker, LCMFT, CST. She's the owner and founder of Symmetry Solutions. She's been in practice for more than 20 years, works with adults and adolescents. She specializes in mental health therapy, sex therapy, sexuality concerns, family couples services, faith transitions. Lisa Butterworth, there's Lisa, is a licensed professional counselor who specializes in faith transitions, mixed faith marriage, and sexual concerns. She's the founder of Feminist Mormon Housewives, and likes to play nerdy board games with her husband and three kids. Sarah Hughes Zababa is a licensed clinical social worker, wellness coach, and yoga instructor who specializes in treating trauma, depression, and anxiety. She often works with LGBT plus individuals and their families to foster acceptance and promote advocacy skills, as well as individuals and couples experiencing life transitions related to their faith. Jana Spangler is an integral professional coach. She works with Symmetry Solutions, specializing in faith transitions and their impact on identity, relationships, and spirituality. She's a student at the Living School under the direction of Father Richard Rohr, OFM, studying contemplative wisdom traditions. Jennifer White is a therapist who specializes in helping people with depression, anxiety, sexuality concerns, trauma, and faith transitions and journeys. Sue Bergen, that's me, is a life coach specializing in positive psychology coaching with Symmetry Solutions. I also write the family focus section for BYU Magazine, and I teach writing part-time in the BYU Marriott School of Business. Now for the presentation. Thanks for your patience.
That was quite the intro. It's time to go. All right, so we have an hour and a half this time. Oh, I'm so excited. The hour ones are tough for me. If you haven't noticed, I like to talk. So we are going to talk about boundaries. And so before we start really any presentation, I like to set up some disclosures and expectations so that this has a higher chance of going well. Sometimes if you don't have kind of ideas about what you expect and what we expect, there's potential for miscommunications or things of that nature. So right off the bat, this isn't group therapy. At the same time, most of what we're going to be doing today is going to be answering questions. So we are going to probably present for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then we're going to open it up to kind of group discussion. So please feel free to come up to the microphone to ask your question, and we ask that that be somewhat short and direct because we'd like to answer as many questions as possible. And at the same time, even though this isn't like formal therapy, I think it would be helpful if we would all just be cautious about confidentiality. I don't necessarily want any of you to be like, yeah, Bishop, so Sister so-and-so was at the boundaries presentation and asked a question about, you know, what she can do to not accept your calling. So try not to, you know, say things like that. Mormonism, whether within activity or post-Mormonism, is a very small world, as I've come to find out. And we know each other in ways that we wouldn't always expect. So try to honor people's stories by being confidential about them. The next thing is just kind of the step in and step out process. So if you're like me that likes to talk a lot and has a lot that I think is so valuable for all of you to hear all the time, my challenge is to step back, right? And allow other people's voices to come forward. And if I've made already, you know, one or two comments, maybe that's sufficient for a group of this size. If you are one who doesn't necessarily like to step forward, I would just encourage and invite you to step into that discomfort because we'd love to hear from you. And it's often the people we hear least from that we learn most from. So just be willing to do that if possible. I will respectfully, with a big smile on my face, interrupt you or redirect you if we feel like you're going too strong. And my smile means I'm not trying to shame you. It's just I know what it's like to be nervous and talk a lot. So if I do that, please don't take offense to it. We're just trying to, again, keep this to a timely manner. And we would also just ask that, you know, when we have discussion and when we talk about belief systems or different things that might work for us, that we remember the for me strategy. So there is a big difference between saying the church is true or the church is a cult to for me, the church is true. And for me, the church is a cult, right? And so it's a lot friendlier that way. And it doesn't quite get me as saucy when your position doesn't match mine, right? So I'm like, oh, well, that works for them. That's, you know, that's feels less directive. And I think it fosters more communication. So this is us giving you our boundaries on what we hope will happen in this session. And if you feel like you cannot abide by these boundaries, you are more than welcome to leave at any point, and that's perfectly fine. None of us will take offense to that. All right, so getting started. We came up with the idea of this panel because we get to work together a lot, and we see issues of boundaries come up often in the work that we do with members of the church, again, no matter where they're at in the belief spectrum. So we came up with actually a series of podcasts that we did on boundaries on the Mormon Mental Health Podcast. So if you're not familiar with that, just let you know that this is kind of where this idea of presenting to you today came from. And if you want to delve into anything a little bit more, this would be a good resource. So we came up with, you know, just boundaries in general, boundaries with in-laws and parents, boundaries helping kids know their boundaries and teaching them about boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. So we have a lot of themes, and we would encourage you to visit those websites. And with that, I will hand it over to...
So I think this is a really interesting question. What are personal boundaries? And I will tell you honestly, like, that before I started my counseling school, I had no idea. And I would hear people say, boundaries, and I'd be like, oh, what does that mean? Because that's not something that I was taught within a Mormon construct. Like, I didn't have a sense that I was, that it was okay to say no to things, or that there was any choice other than being super nice all of the time. Ah, I got that closer to my mouth now. I'm really loud. So, boundaries are an internal set of rules that we have for ourselves. And breaking it down to its simplest component, it's kind of like, is this okay with me, or is this not okay with me? And within the way that I was raised, I wasn't taught that that really mattered, right? Like, what was okay with me or what was not okay with me was sort of beside the point to what it was I was told I should do, or what it was told the expectations for me were, or what it was I was supposed to do in order to be a good person. So this whole idea of boundaries is a journey, because often we don't know at first. And so sometimes we think that we're okay with opening ourselves up to someone or sharing something, and it isn't till we're halfway through it that we realize, oh, I'm resenting this, or I'm feeling like a martyr, and that's when we start to know, you know, like, oh, I time to learn. I must have crossed over my boundaries. So boundaries are when we start to sense within ourselves that something's not okay with me, and awakening to the idea that I have a right to set that spot where I say, this is okay with me and this is not okay with me. So these are just the basic types of boundaries. Physical boundaries, obviously, this is one that I had to learn with my small ones. I never got to say whether I wanted to give someone a hug or not as a child. And when my children were very little, they didn't get a choice either. But then as I started to learn about boundaries, I learned that, you know what, small children should be able to say, I have a physical boundary. I would like to not hug grandma right now. And so intellectual boundaries, like, is this okay? Is this belief okay with me? Is it not okay with me? Do I want to have this conversation? Do I not? Emotional boundaries are about, who do I want to be vulnerable to? Who do I not want to be vulnerable to? I remember one of my first experiences with emotional boundaries had to do with my home teacher saying, I would like you to bear your testimony of this. And I was like, I don't really know you. I don't want to talk about that. You know, and that was a huge moment for me in learning that I had a right to set boundaries. Sexual boundaries. So, again, even though we would think that within Mormonism, you know, we would be very clear on sexual boundaries, often because we are told these are your values and this is what should and shouldn't be okay with you, we often have a hard time figuring out what our sexual boundaries are. Material boundaries. Is this just finances, and do I want to... I didn't talk about this first. But and then time boundaries, you know, like, what's okay or not okay with me the way I use my time? Do I want to be using my time in to have this conversation with this person? Is this nurturing us? Or am I starting to feel uncomfortable, or do I not want to do that? So,
all right, and these are just a few very helpful tips that I find helpful. And I'll mention a couple of these. Modeling, like, how you want to be treated when you're starting out to maybe express what your boundary is, can be very helpful for them to understand. And as you're doing that, using I statements, that definitely helps people to hear you rather than going with that blaming, you do this or you do that. I think it's important to really invite people. If we're going to have, like, a hard discussion, inviting other people and allowing them to say no, just making that a safe space. And sometimes we have to do some of our own work and get clear on what boundary we want to set. And that includes kind of being self-aware about what our needs and our wants are, and what we're okay with and what we're not. Again, often when we're setting a boundary, we are sharing what our needs are. And I don't, and it's important to own our needs and our wants and not just demand for them to be met or not just tell people what to do, but to ask so that they can say, I'm not in a place right now to give that, so that they have that option too. You know, that might even be similar to the boundary we're trying to set. And part of this is having this, conducting a both and conversation. And there's several components to this. So like, we want to show what we do appreciate about someone. You know, like, Bishop, I really appreciate that you see these good qualities in me and that you want me to serve in this calling. And also, I am dealing with some personal things that I don't feel comfortable sharing right now. And I don't really have the time for that. And so that's not something I can do right now. The example. And then I really like the 4-to-1 ratio. And this is hard to do. And so what this is about is making sure that we're having, for every one negative comment we're making, we're having 4 positive, especially in our relationships that are important to us. People need that in relationships, but it's certainly not easy. It's one of those things you have to work on and practice.
So at Symmetry Solutions, we all have the opportunity of writing blogs. And so I wrote a blog on some of the very simple suggestions and what I consider my recipe for setting boundaries with individuals that I want to maintain contact with. So these are individuals that are important to me, who are in my support system or in my community. So I just want you to think maybe this could apply to a loved one or a church member or a family member. So someone that you really do want to maintain an honest and healthy relationship with. The very first is expressing gratitude. Most of the time when we're setting a boundary, we're nervous about setting a boundary because we're worried there's going to be a disconnection. With that very first step, expressing gratitude, if someone's asking you to do something, let's consider a calling. Thank you so much for considering me, right? So oftentimes when people approach us for something, to do something, to give something of our time or our finances, just taking a moment to express gratitude, if it's sincere and honest for you, can really help create a positive experience in setting a boundary. The second would be establish a very clear boundary. Say exactly what you need or do not need. And this is, I'm going to challenge all of you. This is where we show up and say, I'm sorry. Take the sorry out and just see how that feels. So thank you so much, Bishop, for considering me for a calling. Right now is not the right time for me or my family. Very clear boundary. And sometimes we have to think about what that boundary is before we go into these conversations, if that is something that is not natural to us, right? Then reiterate the importance of the relationship. You know, once again, I'm so grateful that you considered me. Our friendship is meaningful. I'm grateful to be part of this ward, if that's sincere. So honor that. It might not be sincere, so I don't want you to be inauthentic, because that isn't what I want to support for me. Another example, just so you can kind of see this recipe. Someone invites you to church, and you're on a sabbatical, or if you've left. You know what? Thanks so much for thinking about me. That means a lot that you'd reach out and ask me. Going to church at this time is not the right choice for me or my mental health. Boundary. No apology. I won't be seeing you on Sunday. Could we get together on Tuesday for lunch? I'd really love to see you. Your friendship is meaningful to me. Right? Should we do one more? Do you think that's enough? Pretty. That's good. So that's just, I know it's simple. I know it takes practice. But those 3 things I have found to be the most successful in setting pretty basic beginning boundaries with the people that ask us to do things that we may or may not feel comfortable with or is not the right choice for us.
Okay.
Hey, so what are the boundaries that, or the barriers that we have to setting boundaries? So why do we not enforce and uphold these things? I mean, it's hard. Boundaries are really hard, just so you know. And it's not, for me, it was not an easy process. So when I first started hearing about boundaries, oh, sorry. Thank you. You'd think I'd learn. I did not. Okay. So with boundaries, I totally understand Lisa when she says, I didn't understand boundaries. I didn't know what they were either. They were not modeled to me growing up. And it honestly, even after someone told me what a boundary was, it took me a couple of years. I'm not kidding. Of like trying and very clumsily doing this to finally feel like, I went, oh, that's what a boundary is. I'm not trying to control the other person, really. I just kind of wanted to tell them what to do. It's really hard to distinguish those things sometimes. So what keeps us from doing it? First of all, I just think it is not taught to us growing up. This is not a natural thing in our community. And it's not modeled to us. It's new, and it's, I mean, we don't know how to do this. There can also be this fear of rejection. Like, I this relationship means a lot to me, and I'm really afraid of what's going to happen if I start doing this boundary. And we all have this fear of abandonment at our core, right? We relationship is really important to us. It's really core to who we are. Some of us fear confrontation. Others thrive on it, but some of us fear that. So if you're someone who does not like the confrontation, doing boundaries can really be scary. It can be a really scary move, especially if your relationship has not been very boundaried. Doing it for the first time, it's really kind of stepping into the unknown a little bit about how that's going to go. Guilt, you know, how many of us just say yes to things out of guilt, or we think that's selfish of us if we're, you know, to feel like we need that to honor our own needs. Not taught that. And then the safety concern, there are some situations where when we start doing boundaries, and especially in relationships where you have some set patterns, it's not always really smooth. People don't always respond very well to boundaries. And it can bring up concerns of, if I say that, am I going to be safe emotionally or even sometimes physically and in other ways? So all of those things can be difficult, but I think we can also work through those. So,
Sue, I'm going to put you on the spot.
I have something to add.
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you.
So when Sarah said, drop the I'm sorry, why? What's the harm in saying, I can't take this calling right now, I'm really sorry? Doesn't that make it more palatable? Doesn't that soften it? Doesn't that help make you seem still faithful enough if you put that I'm sorry in there? The problem with I'm sorry is that it's an apology, and you make apologies when you've done something wrong. And if you have done nothing wrong, to apologize is to collude in perpetuating this culture that is so guilt-based. American culture, world culture, but also Mormon subculture. So if you don't want to be part of this guilt-based culture, you need to stop saying I'm sorry. It's hard. I catch myself still saying it. But it's really better to save guilt when you've actually done something wrong and don't use it for situations where you haven't.
And one last point that I'll make is a lot of times we confuse this idea of conditional or unconditional love with boundaries. And so we have this idea, well, if I unconditionally love somebody, I should be okay with anything they do or say or believe or things of that nature. And so I'll give just a sexual example that I just gave out there to people that cornered me for sex for sex information, although very lovingly, and I accept it, so that was my boundary. is, for example, if somebody says, you know, hey, I'm interested in, oh, I don't know, having oral sex, right? And somebody goes, what? Yuck, I can't believe you're interested in that. And no, I don't want to do that. I don't know why you think I'd want to do that. Not only are you placing a boundary, but you're kind of shaming the other person. And I would say that's not being unconditionally loving. I think that's being conditional about the love that you're offering. If you say, oh, well, thanks for sharing that with me. That's probably not super easy to bring that up in our relationship. And I can see how, you know, some people do like oral sex and you happen to be one of those. I'm going to be super honest with you that right now that's bringing up some anxiety for me. And I don't know that that's something that I would really enjoy or have enjoyed in my past. So now we're probably going to have a conversation about how we negotiate that. But again, thanks for sharing that with me. I think that's unconditional love, not necessarily meaning that you're going to have oral sex. Okay, so that's a kind of an example of how you do boundaries with this idea of whether or not you're conditional or unconditional in your love and respect for another human being. Okay? All right, so at this point, we are going to welcome you to do one of the following. You can ask a question just generally about boundaries and anything that we've just shared with you, ask more clarifying questions on. You can share an experience that you're currently going through that's difficult for you to know how to negotiate a boundary, whether you're the one that's trying to set it or whether somebody's trying to set it with you. Or you can share an experience where you feel like you were very successful at setting a boundary and you'd like to maybe offer a helpful hint or strategy that you found helpful in your life. Or maybe an experience where you feel it went really wrong and you learned something from that. So we're going to open it up to discussion time because we feel like that's a great way to learn. So feel free to do that. And they do make us do that into the microphone. If you can't get up or don't want to get up, we will answer. We can repeat your question, you know, into a microphone.
So these are kind of brutal, in a relationship, somebody says, please don't call me that. And the person repeats what they just called you and then accuses you of saying, you just want to change me. So how to deal with somebody who's staunch on not changing based on those very solid boundaries? And I have another question after.
If this is coming from someone where it's in a really important relationship to you, I would just get curious, like what that's about and what's going on for them that they feel controlled. So maybe asking more questions. Also, often, even when people do agree to do those things, I know I'm guilty of this. I've been asked not to say certain things, and then I mess up. But I continue to try and own that. So that's a little bit different if they're not owning it.
In a non-heated moment, so definitely not in that fight when that person is calling the other person a name that's really hurtful, I would ask that person to say, I just want you to know when you call me this name, this is how it makes me feel. Right? So really clarifying, and then you could set the boundary, that's not okay with me.
The person will say, good, I hope you feel that way. Mm. That's kind of the, I want to hurt you.
So a couple of key things in the tips that Jen went over with boundaries is it's good to know what we need, and it sounds like you know what you need in that, right? And then it's to ask for it clearly and lovingly. And even in the heat of the moment, you can say, please don't do that. It sounds like you did that. And the thing we don't have any control over is whether they're going to offer that or not, right? So they didn't do it in a very loving way, but they were basically telling you, I can't do that right now, and I'm unwilling to do that. So then this is where it becomes on you to be a little unattached to what the response is going to be, right? Knowing you have no control over it and then decide what you are going to do at that point. Then it's all on you because you cannot make that person do something. So what am I going to do if that is not honored? And that's when you get to decide, and it's something you do just for you. I'm going to remove myself. You can say, this conversation is no longer safe for me. Whatever you need to do to say, I'm removing myself from this situation. Maybe we can come back later when things are less heated. But just something clear that you are going to do that you have control over to keep yourself safe.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to all of that is that I think that every person in your life has to go through your measurement of the intimacy meter, which means some people will be very safe and you want to have a relationship with, but intimacy is a two-way street. You can only have as much intimacy as both of you are willing to offer safety. And so you may want a 7 with a particular person, but they can only offer a 2. And then you have to kind of grieve aspects of that relationship because you're probably not going to be able to reach the 7 that you were hoping for. And this is particularly difficult in family relationships because you feel maybe an obligation to stay connected or to have relationships with people that you're related to. But again, like everybody has kind of mentioned, you may have to put, there's picket fence boundaries, and then there's kind of like the barbed wire electrical fence boundaries. And sometimes you do need to kind of step back and say, well, then I honor that you can't do that for me, and I will no longer be able to attend the family reunions, or I will no longer be able to come to Sunday dinners. I love you, and I'm sad about that, but that's just what I have to do to take care of myself.
My other question is, this is kind of an example of a boundary. It's like, please have patience with me as I basically retract myself from you emotionally and socially, physically. I need to resolve my own personal hang-ups. And this happened to me where a year later I come back and redress and try to figure out what's going on, and this person says, our relationship's over. And never really telling me that up front. So it seems to me I made the judgment call of this was a fake boundary. How do you discern, I guess, what's fake and what's a real boundary?
So are you saying that you said I need some space, or they said? Okay. So they said I need some space to work out my own stuff. And then a year later when you came back, they said, no, the relationship's over. Okay. Yeah, and so that felt like it was a fake boundary to you, that they sort of used the space as a gateway to sort of breaking it off. Yeah. And can I ask what it is that... what it is that you want to know about that a little bit more?
How do I know, basically, are there any signs, evidences of, hey, that's not a real boundary? Could I've pushed on that boundary maybe a little bit and instead of immediately respecting it? Maybe pushed on it, questioned it, and maybe given it a timeline even? I don't know.
I think it's totally valid to sort of express what you would like or the need that you would like addressed with that person and to say, you know, I respect your desire to have some space. One thing I would like is to know if there's a time when I could check back in to see if, you know, is that something you'd be willing to negotiate? But again, when we ask for our needs to be met, it's really important that we are asking and not demanding. Because if we demand that our needs get met, it's no longer about negotiating boundaries. It's about sort of expectations and shoulds and trying to control someone. And then that creates distance automatically. People don't want to feel like they're being controlled or told what to do. And so expressing your needs about saying, I would like to know when I can check in with you again, or, you know, but often people are terrible at setting real boundaries. And my take on that is that when somebody is terrible at setting boundaries with you, when they're not honest about what their boundaries are, that's really good information to have about that person, right? You just learned something really important about them. And that you can use that information with them in the future to know that their boundaries aren't that they aren't necessarily good at expressing their boundaries in a way that feel good to you. You can't change that about them, but you can use that information to change the way you approach the relationship you have with them.
In the future, so hindsight's 20/20, right? But in the future, if someone ever came to you and said, this relationship needs to take some space, the wisdom you could take into that with a new boundary would be, I hear you, I want to honor that space. I'm scared of losing this relationship, so if at any point in time that boundary changes for you, could you please let me know? Instead of waiting a year to find out. So kind of asking for what you need while also respecting that space.
Yeah, and often sometimes we are assuming we know what, you know, others are thinking. And that, you know, is one of the thinking errors when we're just assuming and projecting that. And maybe this person needed a process and didn't know ahead of time what that was going to look like and then came to a conclusion. But, it can look different situations.
Hi. This is a question about respecting people's boundaries and when it comes to your children. I have a shy or introverted teen that was asked to speak in sacrament meeting and felt very uncomfortable doing that, and I supported him. And later, I got blowback from the bishop on that. He felt like I should be pushing him past his comfort zone. And I think I deal with that a lot with this teen, is how much do you push them so they're not hiding versus respecting them and where they're at?
I have that same thing in my life. I'm going to recommend a book really quick. It's called The Highly Sensitive Person by Aron, A-R-O-N. And one of the things she talks about that I really like is that when you have a highly sensitive child, it is a delicate balancing act between not sort of overprotecting them, where you're allowing them to sort of like move so far inward that they're not doing things that would enrich their lives and make them happy if they found the courage to do that. But you're also not pushing them in ways that feel like a violation and feel unsafe to them and then create experiences that then make them want to withdraw even more, right? And so it is a delicate balancing act between those two things. And I really like the idea of maybe talking to your bishop. Ooh, I'm learning. Talking to your bishop in a way that uses that and language. Like, Bishop, I really appreciate that you care about my son and that you are concerned about his growth. And as his mother, I understand my child and what his needs are. And I want to again tell you that I appreciate the opportunities that the church makes for him to have to give these talks. And when the time comes that he feels that he's ready and our family feels that this is right for him, I will let you know.
I wouldn't underestimate adolescents. Ask them what they think about it. So how much distress is your son or an introverted child having about not feeling comfortable in social situations? Is that something that they want to shift or change, or are they perfectly comfortable in those spaces? And again, I'm not saying that's 100% where you should go, but I think it's an important thing to be asking. And also, I like the idea of a measurement scale of discomfort and teaching your children about that. So a 10 is like a full-blown panic attack. And a two or a three is just kind of like, oh, I'm a little nervous, you know, and my heart rate is going up a little bit. And helping your children understand that we want experiences in our life where we're at a three to a five, because that is how we grow. But if you're telling me that you're really at a nine or 10 about that, I will totally honor that, because I don't want you experiencing that level of anxiety.
And that's also a great opportunity when they do clarify their boundary for us to practice as parents respecting their boundary and helping advocate for them in that boundary within a Mormon context.
There's a few spaces up here if you want to kind of get in line.
So I live like 1,000 miles away from here, which is the best part of going through a faith crisis, because all my family is here. And I have a really complicated relationship with my in-laws, and I'm seeing them for the first time in a long time this coming weekend. And I want to honor my journey and be true to myself, but they're not safe to be open with, and they are sure to push me into the same boxes that they've always done and make assumptions about where I am church-wise. What's a healthy boundary when I'm not out to them about my faith crisis and the resulting choices? I don't like hiding and pretending and, you know, playing a game, but I also don't want to engage in a war of words over this, you know, kind of struggles that I'm having.
And a specific podcast that we did on this, on setting boundaries with parents and in-laws.
I love that you have the internal wisdom that you know they're not safe. I think you need to recognize, too, they're going to push that because people want to know. And in-laws often think that if you married into your family, they have a right to know. And I hear you from a very personal place as well. And so what I would say is, and this is the first, can I ask the question, is this the first time you're seeing them kind of in the midst of your faith journey?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's new to you. Usually our emotions are really high in the beginning of a faith crisis. So sometimes we're so vulnerable that we're not in a good place to have these really healthy conversations. And if your in-laws aren't safe, this is, you're wise to consider how to do this. My favorite phrase is, that's not the right choice for me, and I'm not ready to talk about it. But thank you for caring. Thank you for asking. When I am, I'll let you know. But I would keep it very, my recommendation, keep it small, keep it concise, and don't go there till you're ready to go there, if ever. They're going to push back. And once again, it's that love and gratitude. I can see that you're concerned. Thank you. I love you for that. I need you to hear me. I'm not ready to talk about this. That would be my suggestion.
Sometimes it helps to look at the broader doctrine that's behind so much of this anxiety and fear that comes from family members who are watching us, or you, or whoever, change or raise questions. And I think an important one to remember is this teaching that the sin is on the head of the parents if the children are not taught. Okay, the children have been taught, right? But that still rings in people's ears who have any sort of responsibility for others. It rings over and over, and they have to repeat the teachings, which is so offensive to those who are in faith crisis or transition or expansion. But I think it helps sometimes to remember that teaching and where they're coming from and how critical that feels to them. And I wish we could change that teaching.
One of the things that I talk about is systemic authenticity versus individual authenticity. If I was going to visit the Middle East, I would probably dress differently than I'm dressed today. That doesn't make me less authentic of a person. I'm just respecting the culture and the boundaries that a certain cultural setup has set up for me. So I'm not saying that you should always not wear your bikini at the family reunion, but I'm just saying that if you if you're in a space where, again, this is new, where you're starting and you're not ready to have those conversations, I wouldn't want you to feel less authentic because you're honoring the authenticity of the system that you're still very much a part of. And so, you know, so you kind of make those choices along the way, you know, like at this particular point, you know, bothering my mom with a coffee cup in my hand is probably not something I'm willing to do. Maybe a year from now you feel differently about that, but it's still coming from an authentic place because not only are you worried about yourself, you're also worried about your relationship with your mother.
Just a really quick, when this comes up in conversations with people and I suggest the kinds of things you're saying, and but that's not authentic, I just say, it's gracious. Replace the word, see if gracious fits, and that can help.
I suppose this sounds like something of a follow-up to the last question. How do you handle people who deliberately violate the boundaries you thought you had set up?
Yeah, so I would say, again, it's kind of a similar thing. You can always reiterate the boundary, especially if it's been a while since you talked about it the first time. You can get curious, like we've heard. I've asked for this, and I'm curious why that's difficult. You can have a conversation about that. And again, at the end of the day, because you have no control over whether they are actually able to do that, I think it is an important part of boundary setting to have an idea in your head of what can I do to take care of myself if I don't get what they're asking, you know, what I'm asking for. So what do you need to do about that? And sometimes that's really hard to decide what that needs to look like. But if you have communicated clearly, if you've had deeper conversations about it and it's still just not, they're not able to meet what you need, then you need to decide if you need to remove yourself in some way or do something else.
Another thing I've seen successful in addition to that, Janet, is making sure they're recognizing. So I've asked multiple times for you not to bring up my faith transition at dinner with the family. I'm seeing that's really hard for you because consistently it happens. I'm going to have to start thinking about consequences for me to keep myself safe. So that might mean our family's no longer coming. So I want you to know, unless this boundary really is respected and I'm serious about it, there's going to be natural consequences so I can protect myself. Sometimes people don't recognize that there are consequences to their behavior. And so even letting them know that you're exploring consequences, or you're, maybe that's too strong of a word, you're exploring options on how to keep yourself safe, that can sometimes be a big enough invitation for them to figure out that there's a loss here if they continue to behave in the similar pattern.
Well, one possible response that I have heard to some of these things that come in the form of a question is, why do you ask? And sometimes I think the answer you get could be interesting. Would you care to comment on that, or is that a good strategy, or is that asking for things that you don't want to find out about?
Yeah, I think why do you ask could certainly fit within the realm of what we've been talking about, is approaching it with some curiosity, right? That's and again, my kind of, the point I wanted to sort of bring into all of this was that in the midst of all of this, we all are learning how to meet our own needs within the midst of these boundaries, because that's kind of the point of the boundary, is recognizing what our needs are, honoring that those needs are valid, and trying to make sure that we are meeting our needs and asking for our needs to be met by the people who love us, right? And asking in a way that is really asking and not telling, right? And in the midst of all of this, sometimes, like Sarah said, we are super tender. Sometimes we are super wounded. Sometimes we do not have the space to be curious about why they won't meet our needs. Like, sometimes we just have to keep ourselves safe, and that is okay, right? Like, we don't always have to be curious about why someone is unwilling to respect our boundaries. sometimes we just have to remove ourselves, and that's okay. And sometimes setting a boundary, people are going to respond really badly. They're going to get angry. They're going to blame us. They're going to be cruel. And that is okay, too. It's okay for people to respond badly to our boundaries. It's okay for this not to go well. And it's okay for us to not do it perfectly. It's okay if we don't follow all these rules, because we're learning. And if we can be open to the fact that we're learning and that we're wounded and that we get to make mistakes and we get to, like, mess up and allow space for all of that and just learn from all of those things. And then when our wounds start to heal, when we make space for ourselves to heal, then, and when we have practiced boundaries enough, right, then we might get to the point where, you know, like, reaching out in curiosity to the person that is hurting us about what it is they, what need they're trying to get met with that behavior. That's great. That's a great thing to do, especially if we love that person and want to have a relationship. But it's not required. It is a good idea if you want to maintain a relationship. But sometimes we're too wounded in the midst of that.
I'm just going to put my moderator hat on for a moment and make sure that there's some, aren't others who have some questions? And then feel free. We just want to give lots of people the chance.
I have a very overzealous visiting teacher. Could you talk about that? I love the banana bread, but the visits are much more frequent than I would like and much more intrusive in, you know, what's really going on with me and my family.
Is your question how to manage that?
Yes.
Okay.
The direct approach is irreplaceable in situations like this. Gentle, but introduce next time she comes by. Can we talk for a minute about how this is going? And give her some gentle, kind, but direct feedback. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not what we're used to in the church. I was Relief Society president until not too long ago, and I taught over and over again that people are allowed to express their needs, especially in a visiting teaching situation, and that it's very important that those who are doing the teaching or ministering check in with those they're teaching and ministering to, which she's obviously is not doing, which means that then it falls on you to have to do that. She's not going to. So I think the evidence is pretty clear. So gentle, direct, and see how much she can handle and take it a little further as she absorbs what you're trying to communicate with her. And if you have to, you may have to, she won't get it at first, and you're going to have to repeat. You're going to have to get a little stronger, perhaps, with each attempt. Might not work the first time.
Sometimes when we're really clear about what we don't want someone to do, how we can help them is tell them exactly what we do want them to do, right? So if you're not wanting invasive family experiences with this visiting teacher, saying, you know what, I would really appreciate it, just a text message check-in. That's exactly what I'm needing right now, and I'd really appreciate if you'd honor that need as my ministering sister. So sometimes we have to say, this is what I'm not okay with, but sometimes in situations where people are just trying to help or do their calling, it's really helpful to say, this is actually what would be really helpful for me. That can kind of, and don't apologize, because you don't do anything wrong, but that might help her too, to say, love the banana bread. Feel free to drop it off, but if you just want to check it in, just reach out via text. Love ya, you know.
Yeah, and to address the question of if she's getting a little invasive, you know, going into territory that, you know, she's been assigned to you. You didn't choose to have this person in your life, and you are perfectly within your rights to be able to decide how much of yourself you want to disclose. So, you know, as has been said, I love just reiterating gratitude for her interest. And, you know, I just really feel your care and your love for me. And you know, that's just, I'm not comfortable talking about that right now. And I just love I love your care for me. You know, you can kind of sandwich these things. Call it the sandwich approach. You start with something really, this is so wonderful. You're wonderful. I appreciate it. You give some gratitude. You make the best banana bread, you know, whatever that is. And then you tell them what you need. And then you can sandwich it on the other side with also something kind and inviting and loving.
I'm just wondering. Perfect. It's my favorite amount of time to have left. I'm just wondering if you, if you have a friend that you suspect might be going through, like, a faith transition, but they haven't necessarily been really vocal about it, like. Maybe you see like a Facebook post and you're like, oh, okay. Or you're like, oh, they like so-and-so on Facebook. This is interesting. Or, you know, I don't know, something that might make you think that and you want to talk to them about it because you're going through that as well. Like, what's a good way is like, should that be brought up at all? Is there a good way to bring it up without like potentially hurting them if they're not ready to talk about it, or if you're completely way off base and then maybe you out yourself to them and then it harms you instead? Like, where's a good boundary to be supportive, I guess, but not like get in someone's space if they're not ready for that?
I think like what you described, a perfect example would be to bring up the posts that made you go, right? Just say to them, oh, I saw that you posted on this person, and then give them a few thoughts of your own that are maybe not super vulnerable, but just open it up a little bit and say, I'm curious what you like about them, or, you know, tell me a little bit about that and see, you know, and then you can volley back and forth a little bit with a little bit of vulnerability and see how they take it. If they close off or put up a wall, then you got your answer. If they open up a little bit, then you open up a little bit and then volley back and forth and see what happens.
And it's okay to just always say, if this isn't something you want to talk about, like, I totally get that. So that you're, in a sense, kind of preemptively saying, it's okay to have a boundary about this.
I actually use that a lot with Mormons, where I will say, here's the thing, feel free to have a boundary about that. And when I do that accidentally with non-Mormons, they kind of look at me funny. But Mormons always really appreciate it.
As you noted at the beginning of the program, the Mormon and post-Mormon world is a very small one. So I'm curious how you guys establish and maintain healthy boundaries with the community that you serve.
You go on John DeLynn's show and share your entire frickin' life. I need to get your own supervision about that.
I was going to say, it takes a lot. You have to do a lot of work on yourself. You have to know what triggers you. You have to know, you know, where your issues are going to bleed over into and affect relationships, professional relationships with people. And you're not going to be perfect at it. You're muddling, too. You're muddling through. We're all muddling through. I mean, we are trained. We have experience. But to some degree, you know, it's not going to be done perfectly.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, I'm the founder and president currently of the Mormon Mental Health Association. And most of us who do therapy and coaching work have been trained to, you know, be careful about self-disclosure, or at least understand what self-disclosure can mean to other people, where your friendships lie, where your, you know, where you do professional services and where you don't. And so each of us has probably our own individual relationship with those kinds of issues, and it can be challenging. And I think it's good to be in supervision and good to be with colleagues who call you out or challenge you or are willing to do that. And why I bring up the MMHA in particular is because we want therapists to be very aware of their potential biases given their own belief structures and whether or not they're imposing their Mormonism or non-Mormonism onto their clients. And so we're very, very careful about vetting for that.
I also think as culturally as Mormons, we have this like blanketed trust. I mean, we send our kids into meetings with bishops that we may or may not know on a very personal level, right? Like we trust our kids with primary teachers. Like there's just this kind of inherent trust, right? Until there's not an inherent trust. So I just want you to recognize is in the Mormon and post-Mormon world, like can we practice that trust as something that's earned? So before you divulge your life or the most vulnerable aspects of yourself, has that person earned their trust? It's really interesting. In our Mormon words, we just immediately trust those people. And then our post-Mormon experiences, we immediately trust those people. Like I think it's allowing, going inward and asking ourselves, do we know someone's trustworthy? How do we take that information in based off of how they respond to us or how they treat us? And then do we make accommodations accordingly?
And even I joke about my sharing my story on Mormon Stories, but I made that decision very deliberately. And I made that decision 23 years into my clinical practice. I was not going to do that 5 years ago even. So you have to get to certain spaces where you're comfortable with yourself and you understand kind of the possible implications of that.
One of the sort of metaphors or analogies that I really like for sharing of the self within a space where you don't know necessarily how safe it is or how trustworthy the people you're sharing with are. You know, for instance, right here, I know a few of you, but not all of you. I could have clients in here or listening to this. And Nadia Boltz-Weber is a minister who's written several books, and she talks about sharing from our scars and not from our wounds, right? And so when I have already worked through something and I feel like it's mostly healed, and, you know, we can't know that it's entirely healed all the time, you know, but when I have really worked through something, it's like it's 23 years ago or whatever, you know, then I feel like I have learned those lessons and I can share from that place because I am not being triggered by my own wounds in that moment. And so I am not relying on the reaction I get from you in order to heal. When I am wounded, when I am dealing with my own raw stuff, those are things I'm only going to share with people who have earned my trust. And when I share those things, I'm going to do so in a way and in a space and in a manner that I trust that those people will be part of my healing. And when I have worked that out, and when I've gotten to a place where I have scars instead of wounds, then I feel like I'm in a place where I can share that with the larger world.
So my question is the difference between a real boundary and a discomfort because something is new or different.
So are you asking when there is a real need for a boundary? Or
how do you tell the difference that I'm uncomfortable with this mm-hmm. because it's new or different? And I'm uncomfortable with this because I'm genuinely uncomfortable with it, mm-hmm. and not just because it's new, or different from what I've done before.
I mean, so how to discern your own discomfort and where that's coming from
is it something that mm-hmm. should be just pushed? Well, like the talk, is it something that should mm-hmm. just be pushed mm-hmm. through? Mm-hmm. Because, and you're mm-hmm. only comfortable with discomfort because you've mm-hmm. never given a talk, say, mm-hmm. and therefore are just uncomfortable. Or mm-hmm. is it that you really, that's not something that you mm-hmm. should just do for you? Psychologically unhealthy for you, but as opposed to you just don't want, you're uncomfortable because it's new.
Different. Yeah, I mean, these things are hard. It requires some self-awareness, right? I mean, that's actually probably the first step in being able to understand if you need a boundary or not. You've got to know yourself a little bit, right? You've got to know what your tolerance is. And, you know, it's okay to not do this perfectly. And it's okay if you're, again, if you're in a safe relationship, if you're with somebody who you can trust, you can always just refer to how you're feeling. And it doesn't really matter why. I'm feeling some discomfort. And maybe I need some time to sit with this and discern what that is, you know? Because we don't always know how we're feeling in the moment and why, and, you know? But we can always just communicate how we feel. I'm feeling a little uncomfortable, so I need some time to think about this before I'm ready to talk about it or engage with this or whatever that may be. So many of us don't check in with our bodies in those kinds of situations. We're a very cerebral society. We're a very cerebral people, by and large. And we're not taught to really pay attention to signals from our body and what that's telling us. So really paying attention to what's going on in there, as you do it more and more, it gets to be more and more reliable data to you of what's really happening. But yeah, I would just say in the moment, you may not know that, and it may take time to figure that out. You know, take some time with it.
And if you make the wrong choice or you find out you made the wrong choice, you can reestablish a new boundary. And that wasn't the right choice for me. I will not be doing that again, or not be doing that in the near future, right? Like, we can try and be brave and then recognize that wasn't healthy or wasn't the right choice for us and course correct. I think oftentimes we think if we make a decision, that's it. Boundaries are continuous. They're fluid. They move. They change because we do.
And actually, making mistakes are often better info. We learn more typically from our mistakes than we do from the things we do right. So all of that is info, right? Try some things. See how it feels.
I just want to add briefly. Anytime we're trying to make a judgment, like this is a tough judgment, or make a change in our lives, like increasing boundaries or building better boundaries, having allies in our life, relying on other people, not just ourselves, can be really important. Sometimes it is just us. It has to be up to us, but often running it by people that we trust, people who've earned our trust, it can be really helpful.
So I've noticed in the Mormon community that there's a stigma among friends and also among people that it's about asking for help. You know, you go check in with a friend and they say, how are things going? And the response is, oh, I'm fine. But in actuality, you know, it's an absolute train wreck. How do you go about navigating that boundary?
I think that's American culture, quite frankly.
I think it depends, you know, like it depends on context a lot. It depends a lot on what kind of relationship do you have with this person. You know, if this is an acquaintance that you don't know very well and they say, oh, I'm fine, I think it's totally fine to like accept that that's a sort of a boundary that they're setting. If this is somebody that you live with in your home and you know that things aren't fine and they say, I'm fine. Right. One of the ways that you can address that is by describing the behaviors that you see without judgment that sort of indicate to you that they're not fine. Right. So you can say to them, I hear you telling me that you're fine, but I also see that your shoulders are like this and you're walking around with your legs going stomp, stomp, stomp. And when I see that behavior, I feel like what I'm seeing is like this kind of angry energy, or I'm seeing this sad energy. Like that's how I'm experiencing it. And if you, you know, like, and then you can offer to let them have that boundary again. Like, if you want me to leave you alone and just say that you're fine, that's okay. But if you're not fine, maybe you could talk to me about it, or maybe I could sit with you and hold your hand, or, you know, I'd be open to hearing what would help meet your needs.
I see this a lot within my friends who are young parents. Like, they say they're fine, and I know we're all just really struggling. And so sometimes when they're not able to tell me what they need and I am in a position to help, I offer and respect their boundary according to that offer. So I'd really like to bring a meal on Tuesday. Would that be okay with you? I would really like to pick up the kids and take them all to the park so you have some time off. Would that be okay with you? So sometimes when we're really seeing people struggle and maybe they don't know what they need or they don't know how or practice in asking for help, sometimes we can step in and make a request, honoring what we're seeing. And then if they say, no, I'm not comfortable with that, then absolutely I would respect that boundary. But when we see people struggling, it's okay to say, I'm worried about you. I love you. Could I do this to be supportive? Or is there another way I can be supportive? And then I usually let that ball be in their court and respect whatever decisions or choices they make regarding that.
From the other side of things, so if it's us who need help, but we're uncomfortable asking for it, I do think that's important to challenge some of those narratives that we do very much have in American culture, which is, you know, asking for help means somehow a weakness or even a sin, or that we should somehow all be self-reliable. And I see this a lot in Mormon communities, you know, where we're super happy to serve other people, but we're not always super comfortable when the service is coming our way. And so again, on that measurement scale of discomfort, can we start some self-awareness of, yeah, I'm kind of a two on being comfortable with asking for help. What's that about? What narratives do I have about that? What stories am I telling to myself about that? And how can I step into some level of discomfort, maybe at first with a trusted friend, or maybe, you know, little by little trying it out with other people in our lives and seeing what it's like to ask for help. So,
going back to what you talked about initially with the ecclesiastical interviews, I have three older boys that are all grown and gone, and I will admit I was totally asleep at the wheel when it came to interviews when they were going through that process. And I have an almost 12-year-old daughter who is an HSP. She's highly sensitive, and she's also a 4 on the Enneagram, and she is really uncomfortable with me. I am about to have that discussion with my bishop about the sexual questions are not okay with me. And I'm not even really sure if I'm okay with the interviews at all, but I'm still working on that. But because she is so sensitive, she's struggling with me when I'm trying to help her set a boundary that she is not aware enough that needs to be set. So what I'm struggling with is I'm a fairly diplomatic person and don't have a problem with it, but I need some verbiage to give her so that if maybe a counselor or somebody else, I'm trusting that my bishop will respect my boundaries, but if somebody else catches her unaware, or he does and says, we need to have a talk, I need some verbiage that is pretty simple and something a really sensitive little girl could say that would, even if she, I don't even know if she really supports the boundaries, but I'm not going to give her an option because she's only 11. So I need some verbiage for her for that.
So I'll give a few thoughts. First of all, I don't think it's necessary for you to feel badly about the fact that you're going to set boundaries for your 11-year-old, even if your 11-year-old is uncomfortable with that. And I would hope that you invite the developmental phases of your daughter to shift as she gets a little bit older. So one thing you can tell her is, like, I get it. You don't want me to step in. That's awkward. It's different. But you're 11. When you're 14, we'll have a different conversation about this, right? Or when you're 13 or when you're 16. Because you can still set the rules for your house depending on your values. Yeah. Yeah, and so then as far as some scripts, and I'd open it up, but, you know, I always say, blame me. My mom won't let me. Mm-hmm. That's a great script, right? It's not my fault. I wish I could talk to you, Bishop, but my mom, you know her, right? So I'll get in big time trouble. So you can always, I always let my kids use me as somebody to blame. And also, I always love the bathroom one. So anytime, nobody's going to stop you from going to the bathroom. Need to go to the bathroom? Go find me. I'll help you take care of it. Those are two very simplistic scripts, so please complicate this for me, O team of mine.
I like the one of, I'll have to ask my parents, can I get back to you? So if she's asked, like, during Young Women's, right, where oftentimes youth are taken out of young men or young women's and have those just kind of impromptu interviews, be like, think, I would like to. She could say whatever feels appropriate in her really kind, sensitive space, but also have the follow-up of, I will have to ask my parents first, or I can't without my parents there, or whatever words are appropriate to you, and throw the parent under the bus. I'm with Natasha, like that mom. And she might have to use that if she personally can't say, I'm not comfortable with that. She can say, my mom is not comfortable with that. And sometimes that's actually what the adult needs to hear, because there's a little bit more authority, respect to the parent, unfortunately, than there is to the minor.
Does that?
Well, kind of. Okay,
come back up. Let's figure this out.
I kind of thought of those and kind of told her those. And she's a pretty emotionally aware little 11-year-old, and she wants to be genuine about it. So I've given her the, you know, throw me under the bus, tell them it's a family rule. And she wants to be able to verbalize why it's not okay, but it's a conversation that at 11 she's just not equipped to have. So I'm trying to give her something that is a little bit more expansive, but still within the realm of her development at 11. Because she just is a really tender little thing that wants to have this good relationship with her bishop and doesn't want to use me as an excuse, because she's learning that she does get to have her own boundaries. But she's still 11.
Right. And it's not just an excuse either. Like, you are telling her, it's not okay with me. Right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not just an excuse. It's not just a backing, you know, like, throw me under the bus. You're actually telling her, it's not okay with me. And so you can say that. I'm just wondering a little bit of, maybe a little more context of what it is that, in what context is she wanting a script? Is it just in the context of a bishop's interview?
That and things she hears from her other leaders that she doesn't appreciate, like modesty stuff, that she hears lessons on that, and she prickles because she and I have had lots of conversations about that, but she doesn't know how to, and she's not really in that place where she can speak up and say something, because obviously she's going into Young Women, so she's going to be the teeny one in the group, but she wants to be able to express it. But she's struggling with confidence, probably, with that right now.
Do you think she would feel too vulnerable to say, I have some feelings about this, but I'm really anxious, so give me a moment, or my anxiety's rising, but I have something to say?
That's probably good. She might actually do that.
One idea I have is being always, that this makes me uncomfortable, or I'm not comfortable with this, or that doesn't feel right to me. Those are kind of brave things to say at 11. One thing, when you have someone who's emerging in their kind of awareness of their own boundaries, which is beautiful, like this is such great development that you're seeing from your daughter, is I talk about there's like three different types of boundaries. Sometimes some boundaries are unspoken and they're simply within. So if she sees something like within church that they say that she does not feel okay with, she can even just say within herself, I am not okay with that. So even if she's not ready to speak a boundary, which is an external form of a boundary, she can still have those internal boundaries. So letting her know that and practicing that, so she's sitting there and she's not ready to speak up yet, but she can say within herself, that's not okay with me. That's the very first step. Then we have spoken boundaries. And then we speak out and say, that's not okay with me. And then we have sometimes behavioral boundaries, like stepping out of the classroom or leaving the lesson, right? So there's all different ways that we can engage in boundaries for ourselves to keep ourselves safe. So even letting her know those three different types, and that she gets to choose when's the right time or when to use those that feel authentic to kind of her emerging understanding of what is and is not safe to her.
Yeah, and then if she's able to do that, if she's maybe just starting with that and saying it to herself, then you can just let her know you can talk to me about that. And that can help give her an outlet for that authenticity, right? Where she has somewhere that she feels very safe that she can process that.
Or she can verbalize it.
Yep, she can actually verbalize it and say, this is not okay.
I like that. Yes, you win. Thank you.
And I was going to say, I think that also when you're dealing with young people and people who are very sensitive, I think honoring their sensitivity and honoring that this desire to be kind and this fear of speaking up, like it comes with both really beautiful strengths and some challenges, right? And honoring that not everybody is going to be the person who stands up in class and calls out something that's not okay, but that we all have different roles and that's okay too. Like maybe you'll be the person who will go up and comfort somebody that you know was hurt by that statement after the class, or maybe that there's a broad range of responding to things, and not everyone is going to be that vocal, outspoken person, and that's okay. That we can honor that we have different ways of moving through the world.
I think this will be my last question. So we talked about kind of this discomfort boundary, and I was wondering if you could dedicate some time to maybe going no contact. I've met post-Mormons, and it saddens me that they're going no contact with family members and whatnot. At what point does no contact make sense?
And that's probably going to look very different for every single person. I think, again, some of the bullet points around that are you've tried several times, you've been clear, the responses you're getting back are harmful. I mean, sometimes, you know, if you've got somebody in your family, and I mean, we've got people in our family where my husband and I can just kind of roll our eyes and chuckle, and the distress isn't super high, you know. So even though they're maybe not respecting our boundaries, we've decided we have the resilience or the capacity to not necessarily cut them off, because it doesn't affect us to the point that we're, you know, having a panic attack when they're not keeping our boundaries. So there are people in our lives that don't do very well with boundaries, but we're able to kind of put up with it, and we're willing to do that. That's our decision, right? It's at a level of distress that is a 3 or a 4. But when it's consistently, you know, keeping you up at night, heart palpitations, really feeling like it's harmful to you or your children or things of that nature, then, yeah, sometimes it gets to the point where, you know, it's either very little contact or written contact only, or once a year type contact, or in certain settings, like public setting kind of contact, or no contact. And this, I think, gets conflated a lot with the forgiveness narrative in our culture, that somehow forgiving somebody means that I need to be okay with being in contact with you. So that I will just really challenge everybody to think about forgiving has nothing to do with whether or not you're going to continue in relationship with somebody.
I have thoughts on this, because I had a whole lot of, it did a lot of damage to my relationship with my parents when I left the church and then got divorced. And it wasn't really like deliberate no contact, and I didn't really necessarily do the thing with like being super clear about boundaries and everything, but it really helped me to have like space from my parents, especially like framing as like, okay, this hurts too much to deal with. And, like, I didn't, like, talk to them at all for, like, a few months after I tried to visit about, like, a year later. And it was just, like, miserable. It was just miserable. And that seemed to really help. Because, like, my parents aren't, like, my parents are good people, but the church stuff got in the way. Because, like, they've been taught all of that. And that's obvious. Like when they started getting in touch again, it was kind of like, oh yeah, and then opening up, not to them, but to like my sister about the ways that it was hurting. And I think she kind of passed it on, because then they would like get in touch like, hey, do you want us to fly you out for Christmas? How many days do you want to be out? Like, are you, do you want to go to church? And like after that, like that space and kind of opening up, not directly to them, but like kind of in an email or like by way of another person, really helped like them realize. And then the combination of those things meant we could kind of start from scratch and like be more clear and like respectful and on the same page. And it really helped. Like I have a really good relationship with my parents again, and I never would have thought that was possible. So I like the idea of treating no contact less as like you're severing a bond, and more just like you're giving yourself space to heal and you're giving them space to heal. Because it's like, it's traumatic when you believe that someone's going to hell. Like honestly, somebody that you love is losing something really important. Like that's traumatic for them too. And like think of it less like severance and more like creating space to heal, so you can like kind of start over fresh. And so it's not necessarily permanent, and it doesn't have to be like you lose it. Yeah.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing those.
I just want to make one comment to that is sometimes space can be healing. I think creating a conversation about, I know this might feel hard and it's very different in our relationship, but I'm going to need to take some space to heal so I can come back and be my most healthy self in my interactions with you. Sometimes we don't have the awareness in the midst of our real pain to say that. But you're absolutely right. Sometimes we need space, a sabbatical from both church and our family members, to get ourselves in a place that we can step back in and sit with respectful difference. One of the things that it concerns me in the Mormon and post-Mormon communities is that we like to feel the same. That's culturally a part of what we've been raised contextually within Mormonism. We like people that think and feel the exact same way as us. And when that is keeping us from having a relationship, I think there needs to be growth there. Can we come back into spaces where there's difference? As long as they're healthy and kind, can we sit in relationships with difference? Because if not, we're also going to lose a huge amount of incredible people in our life that might be able to show up and respect us in difference. So I want you to think, when you think about severing relationships, are these just because you can't sit yet in difference, or are these because these relationships truly are not healthy?
Yeah, and one thing that I would just love to highlight about your story, which I love, is that you were able to reconnect in a healthy way after that space because there were some boundaries. You know, you may not have specifically asked for them, but they got the picture and they offered those to you. And I just want to point that out, that sometimes we feel like boundaries are all about distance, but with really good, proper boundaries, it actually can set up the circumstance for us to lean in and be closer because we feel safe.
It's only sort of relevant, but I kind of wanted to add a bit, like, that's good, but it's still really hard and requires a lot of, like, guts and scary to be willing to try to reconnect with people who have hurt you, and that doesn't, and it's not like you have to, but, but like it's even if you do a good job with the boundaries, that doesn't mean it's going to be easy, I think is where I was going with that.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great, great point. And that's where, again, we get to kind of look at that relationship. And, you know, with a family member, that may be worth that risk. Yeah. And with someone else, maybe not. And you get to kind of assess that.
Really quick. Yep, we're going to close up.
Oh.
After your comment.
Really quick. 2 minutes.
We can do it.
I'm in a mixed faith marriage. I'm the one who has changed. I'm the one who now feels uncomfortable with things like weekly church attendance, wearing the temple garment. How do I approach my spouse, my very understanding spouse, and let her know that my boundaries have changed, and without it escalating into something uncomfortable for everyone? Mm.
1 minute.
Okay, first of all, it's going to be uncomfortable. Sorry.
it's okay, but that's one of those things that we're learning to be okay with difference, right? And so not relating just because this is uncomfortable, that means it's wrong or bad, right? It's okay that this shit, that we have changed and this is now uncomfortable, because intimacy is uncomfortable. Real intimacy is uncomfortable. And so changing that paradigm from intimacy looks like sameness and safety to intimacy looks like holding space for difference.
We have some resources for you if you come forward after Facebook group, podcasts, et cetera.
Yeah, that's true. We're doing a mixed faith, a whole session on it tomorrow at 5 o'clock that you may be interested in. But just really quickly, I would also say that as you are looking at your own shifts, it is also, if you're interested in keeping a good relationship, to be really sensitive and invite her feelings about these things, because she's going to have feelings. And it doesn't mean that you have to give in to everything, but you can open up a conversation. And the best way to do that is just tell her how you feel. I'm feeling like I don't want to wear my garments anymore. It doesn't mean the same thing to me. And in fact, sometimes it makes me really uncomfortable. And I know that this is going to... I'm guessing that this is going to be uncomfortable for you. And I would really like to hear how you feel about that. And it doesn't mean that you have to do whatever she says, but it's a starting point to negotiate. And maybe there are some things that you just want to retain your autonomy and say, I'm going to ultimately make this decision, but you can say it in a way that's like, I really want to know what you think, and I really want to take that into consideration as I make my decision about what I'm going to do.
Thank you so much. Yeah.